I'd been in with Dimitri earlier, except that Eddie didn't know Dimitri's moves like I did, so Eddie wasn't able to completely avoid Dimitri grabbing him by the shoulder and shoving him to the wall. The maneuver had been intended to crush Eddie's skull, but Eddie managed to shift enough so that it was his body that took the brunt of the impact. It still hurt, but he was alive. All of this took place in milliseconds, and in those fleeting moments, my perspective shifted. When Dimitri had been looming over me, about to bite me, I had managed to overcome that impulse to think of him as Dimitri, the person I'd once known and loved. Continually forced into a victim position, with my life about to end, I had kept kicking myself into fight, fight, fight mode. Now, watching someone else battle Dimitri, seeing Eddie's stake snake out at him, well, suddenly, I lost that cool objectivity. I remembered why I'd come here. I remembered what we'd just learned from Robert. Fragile. It was still all so fragile. I'd sworn to myself that if we reached a moment where Dimitri was about to kill me, and I hadn't learned more about saving Strigoi, I would do it. I would kill him. And this was my chance. Between Eddie and me, we could take Dimitri down. We could end this evil state, just as he'd once wanted. Yet, less than a half hour ago, I'd been given a small piece of hope that a Strigoi could be saved. True, that part about a spirit user doing it was absurd, but Victor had believed, and if someone like him had believed... I couldn't do it. Dimitri couldn't die. Not yet. I shot out with my stake, a hard strike that raked the silver point against the back of Dimitri's head. He let out a roar of rage and managed to turn and push me off while still fending Eddie away. Dimitri was that good, but Eddie's stake was getting closer to Dimitri's heart, and my friend's gaze was unwavering, intent on his kill. Dimitri's attention flitted between the two of us, and in one small lapse, only half a breath long, I saw Eddie get his stake in the zone, ready to take a shot at Dimitri's heart, a shot that looked like it might succeed where mine had failed. And that was why, in one smooth motion, I struck out with my stake, swiping it against Dimitri's face and knocking Eddie's arm aside as I did. It was a beautiful face. I hated to mar it, but knew Dimitri would heal. As I made that attack, I pushed past him, shoving into Eddie so that he and I stumbled toward the fire door that was still shrieking its warning. Eddie's stony face registered surprise, and for a moment, we were deadlocked. Me pushing him to the door, and him pushing back toward Dimitri. I saw the hesitation, though. The positioning was off, and Eddie was on the verge of shoving me into a Strigoi, which his training wouldn't allow. Dimitri was already seizing the opportunity, though. His hand reached out and grabbed my shoulder, trying to jerk me back. Eddie caught hold of my arm and pulled me forward. I cried out in surprise and pain. It felt like they were going to rip me in two. Dimitri was by far the strongest, but even stuck in the middle, my weight played a role, and I lent my force to Eddie's, which helped us gain some ground. Still, it was slow going, like walking in honey. For each step I managed forward, Dimitri dragged me back. But Eddie and I were making slow and very, very painful progress toward the wailing door. A few moments later, I heard the clatter of feet and voices. "Security," grunted Eddie, giving me a tug. "Shit," I said.
"You can't win," Dimitri hissed.
He'd managed to get both hands on my shoulders now and was overpowering us.
"Oh yeah? We're about to have the entire Luxor attack squad here."
"We're about to have a pile of bodies here. Humans," he said dismissively.
Those humans reached us. I'm not sure what their impressions were. Some guy attacking teenagers. They shouted about us all letting go and facing them. Directions the three of us ignored in our epic tug-of-war match. Then they must have laid hands on Dimitri. He was still gripping me, but his hold slackened enough that one huge pull from Eddie and a near leap on my part broke me free. Eddie and I didn't even look back, though the security guards were now shouting at us, too. They weren't the only ones shouting. Just before I pushed open the door, I heard Dimitri calling to me. There was laughter in his voice.
"It's not over, Rosa! Do you really think there's anywhere you can go in this world where I can't find you?"
The same warning. Always the same warning. I did my best to ignore the fear those words inspired.
Eddie and I burst into smoggy desert air, as well as sunshine that was still hanging in there, despite being early evening. We were in the Luxor's parking lot, which wasn't crowded enough for us to hide in. With no spoken communication, he and I tore off toward the busy strip, knowing our physical abilities would surpass those of any human pursuers and let us get lost in the mobs of people. It worked. I never saw how many followed us. My guess was the security staff were devoting their attention to the tall guy killing people in their hotel. The voices shouting after us faded, and Eddie and I finally slowed to a stop in front of New York, New York, and again, without even talking, we immediately turned inside the hotel. It had a twisted layout and was more crowded than the Luxor, and we easily blended in until we could find an empty spot of wall on the far side of the hotel's casino. The run had been hard, even for us, and it took us a moment to catch our breath as we stood there. I knew things were serious when Eddie finally turned on me, and anger lit his features. Eddie was always the picture of calm and control, ever since his first abduction by Strigoi last year. It had toughened him, made him more determined to face any challenge. But oh, was he mad at me now.
"What the hell was that?"
exclaimed Eddie.
"You let him go!"
I put on my best tough face, but he seemed to be outdoing me today.
"What, did you miss the part where I was slashing him with my stake? I had his heart. I had a shot, and you stopped me.
Security was coming. We didn't have time. We had to get out of there, and we couldn't let them see us do the killing."
"I don't think any of them are left to report seeing anything," Eddie replied evenly.
He seemed to be trying to regain his composure.
"Dimitri left a pile of corpses there. You know it. People died because you wouldn't let me stake him."
I flinched, realizing Eddie was right. It should have ended there. I hadn't gotten a good look at the number of security guards. How many had died? It wasn't relevant. Only the fact that innocent people had died mattered. Even one was too many. And it was my fault. My silence caused Eddie to press his advantage.
"How could you, of all people, forget that lesson? I know he used to be your instructor. Used to be. But he's not the same. They drilled that into us over and over. Don't hesitate. Don't think of him as a real person."
"I love him," I blurted out, without meaning to. Eddie hadn't known. Only a handful of people knew about my romantic relationship with Dimitri and what had happened in Siberia.
"What?"
Eddie exclaimed with a gasp. His outrage had transformed to shock.
"Dimitri, he's more than my instructor."
Eddie continued staring at me for several heavy seconds.
"Was,"
he said at last.
"Huh?"
"He was more than your instructor. You loved him."
Eddie's momentary confusion was gone. He was back to hard guardian now, no sympathy.
"I'm sorry, but it's in the past. Whatever was between you, you have to know that. The person you loved is gone. The guy we just saw, not the same."
I slowly shook my head. I know. I know it's not him. I know he's a monster, but we can save him. If we can do what Robert was telling us about." Eddie's eyes widened, and for a moment, he was dumbstruck.
"That's what this is about? Rose, that's ridiculous. You can't believe that. Strigoi are dead. They're gone to us. Robert and Victor were feeding you a bunch of crap."
Now I grew surprised.
"Then why are you even here? Why have you stuck with us?"
He threw his hands up in exasperation.
"Because you're my friend. I stayed with you through all of this, breaking out Victor, listening to his crazy brother, because I knew you needed me. You all did, to help keep you safe. I thought you had a real reason for getting Victor out, and that you were going to return him. Does it sound crazy? Yeah, but that's normal for you. You've always had good reasons for what you do."
He sighed.
"But this is crossing a line. Letting Strigoi go in order to chase some idea? Some idea that couldn't possibly work is 10 times worse than what we did with Victor. 100 times worse. Every day Dimitri walks the world is another day that people are going to die."
I collapsed against the wall and closed my eyes, feeling sick to my stomach. Eddie was right. I had screwed up.
I'd promised myself that I would kill Dimitri if I faced him before we could pursue Robert's solution. It all should have ended today. But I had choked up. Again. I opened my eyes and straightened up, needing to find a new purpose before I burst into tears in the middle of this casino. We have to find the others. They're out there unprotected. It was probably the only thing that could have stopped Eddie's scolding just then. Instinctual duty kicked in. Protect Maroi.
Can you tell where Liz is at?
My bond had kept me connected to her during our escape, but I hadn't allowed myself any deeper probing than confirming she was alive and okay. I expanded the link a little further now. Across the street, at MGM. I'd seen the ginormous hotel when we ran into this one, but hadn't realized Lissa was there. Now I could feel her, hiding out in a crowd like us. Scared, but not injured. I would have rather she and the others opted to hang out in the sun, but instinct had driven her to the shelter of walls. Eddie and I spoke no more about Dimitri as we headed out and crossed the busy road. The sky was turning peach, but I still felt secure out there. Far more secure than in the Luxor's hallway. With the bond, I could always find Lissa, and without any hesitation, I led Eddie through MGM's twists and turns. Honestly, the layout of these places just got more and more confusing, until we saw Lissa and Adrian standing near a row of slot machines. He was smoking. She spotted me, sprinted over, and threw her arms around me.
Oh my God, I was so scared. I didn't know what had happened to you guys. I hate that one-way bond.
I forced a smile for her. We're fine.
In a bruise kind of way,
mused Adrian, strolling over. I didn't doubt it. In the adrenaline of a fight, it was easy to not notice injuries and pain. Later, when the battle lust faded, you started to realize just what you'd put your body through. I was so grateful to see Lissa okay that I missed what Eddie had already noticed.
You guys, where are Victor and Robert?
Lissa's happy face crumpled, and even Adrian looked grim.
Damn it,
I said, needing no explanation. Lissa nodded, eyes wide and distraught.
We lost them.
Chapter 11. Well, how perfect. It took us a while to decide our next course of action. We tossed around a few feeble ideas to track Robert and Victor, all of which we eventually shot down. Robert's phone was a cell, and while the CIA could trace those kinds of things, we certainly couldn't. Even if Robert's address was listed in the phone book, I knew Victor wouldn't have let them go back there. And while Adrian and Lissa could spot a spirit user's aura, we could hardly go wandering aimlessly in a city and expect to find something. No, we were out of luck with those two. There was nothing to be done now but head back to court and face whatever punishment awaited us. I had screwed up. With sunset approaching, and seeing as we no longer had a known criminal to get us in trouble, my group glumly decided to head to the witching hour to make our travel plans. Lissa and I had the potential to be recognized over there, but runaway girls weren't quite in the same category as fugitive traitors. We decided to roll the dice, no pun intended, and hang around guardians rather than risk more Strigoi attacks before we could get out of Vegas. The witching hour was no different from any of the other casinos we'd been to, unless you knew what to look for. Humans there were too interested in the allure of the games and glitz to notice that a lot of the other patrons were uniformly tall, slim, and pale. As for the Dompiers, humans couldn't tell that we weren't human. It was only the uncanny sense Maroi and Dompiers had that let us know who was who. Sprinkled throughout the cheering, chattering, and, at times, wailing crowd were guardians. As in demand as guardians were, only a handful could be allocated full-time to a place like this. Fortunately, their numbers were reinforced by the wealthy and powerful who'd come to play. Excited Maroi whooped over slot machines or roulette while silent, watchful guardians hovered behind them, keeping an eye on everything. No Strigoi would come here.
What now?
Asked Lissa, almost yelling over the noise. It was the first time any of us had spoken since deciding to go here. We'd come to a halt near some blackjack tables, right in the thick of everything. I sighed. The mood was so dark. I didn't even need any spirit side effects. I lost Victor.
My own mental accusations were on an endless loop. We find their business center and book tickets out of here, I said. Depending on how long until we can catch a flight, we might have to get a room again. Adrian's eyes were scanning the action around us, lingering longest on one of the many bars.
Wouldn't kill us to spend a little time here,
I snapped. Really? After everything that's happened, that's all you can think about? His enraptured gaze turned back to me and became a frown.
There are cameras here. People who may recognize you. Getting hard proof that you are in this casino and not Alaska is a good thing.
True, I admitted. I think Adrian's typical blasé air was masking discomfort. Aside from learning why I'd really come to Las Vegas, he'd also run into Strigoi, Dimitri among them. That was never an easy experience for any Maroi. Though we've got no alibi for when we were actually in Alaska.
So long as Victor doesn't get himself spotted around here, no one's going to make the connection.
Adrian's voice became bitter.
Which really shows how stupid they all are.
We helped put Victor away, said Lyssa. No one would think we'd be crazy enough to let him out.
Eddie, staying silent, gave me a pointed look.
Then it's settled, said Adrian. Somebody go book us tickets. I'm going to get a drink and try my hand at some games. The universe owes me some good luck.
I'll get the tickets, said Lyssa,
scanning a sign that pointed out the directions for the pool, restrooms, and business center.
I'll go with you,
said Eddie, whereas before his expression had been accusatory, he now seemed to be avoiding my eyes altogether. Fine, I said, crossing my arms. Let me know when you're done and we'll find you. That was Talissa, meaning she'd tell me through the bond. Convinced he was free, Adrian headed straight for the bar, me trailing after him.
A Tom Collins,
he told the Maroi bartender. It was like Adrian had a mental cocktail dictionary in his head and just checked them off one by one. I almost never saw him drink the same thing twice.
You want it spiked?
The bartender asked. He wore a crisp white shirt and black bow tie and hardly appeared older than me. Adrian made a face.
No.
The bartender shrugged and turned around to make the drink. Spiked was Maroi code for putting a shot of blood into the drink. There were a couple of doors behind the bar, ones that probably led to feeders. Glancing down the bar, I could see happy, laughing Maroi with red-tinged drinks. Some liked the thought of having blood with their alcohol. Most, like Adrian apparently, wouldn't take blood unless it was straight from the source. It supposedly didn't taste the same. While we waited, an older Maroi standing next to Adrian glanced over at me and nodded with approval.
You got yourself a good one,
he told Adrian.
Young, but that's the best way.
The guy, who was either drinking red wine or pure blood, jerked his head toward the others standing at the bar.
Most of these are used and washed up.
I followed his shrug, even though there was no need. Interspersed among the humans and Maroi were several Dampier women, dressed very glamorously in silk and velvet dresses that left little to the imagination. Most were older than me. Those who weren't had a weary look in their eyes, despite their flirtatious laughter. Blood whores. I glared at the Maroi.
Don't you dare talk about them like that, or I'll smash that wine glass in your face.
The guy's eyes widened, and he looked at Adrian.
Feisty.
You have no idea, said Adrian.
The bartender returned with the Tom Collins.
She's had kind of a bad day.
The asshole Maroi guy didn't look back at me. He apparently didn't take my threat nearly as seriously as he should have.
Everyone's having kind of a bad day. You hear the news?
Adrian looked relaxed and amused as he sipped his drink, but standing so close to him, I felt him stiffen a little.
What news? Victor Dashkov. You know, that guy who kidnapped the Dragomir girl and was plotting against the queen? He escaped.
Adrian's eyebrows rose.
Escaped? That's crazy. I heard he was at some maximum security place. He was. No one really knows what happened. There were supposedly humans involved. And then the story gets weird.
How weird? I asked. Adrian slipped an arm around me, which I suspected was a silent message to let him do the talking. Whether that was because he believed that was proper blood whore behavior, or because he was worried I'd punch the guy, I couldn't say.
One of the guards was in on it, though he claims he was being controlled. He also conveniently says it's all a haze and he can't remember much. I heard it from some royals who are helping with the investigation.
Adrian laughed, taking down a big gulp of his drink.
That is convenient. Sounds like an inside job to me.
Victor'd have a lot of money.
Easy enough to bribe a guard. That's what I think happened.
There was a pleasant smoothness to Adrian's voice, and as a slightly dopey smile came over the other guy's face, I realized Adrian had pulled a little compulsion.
I bet you're right. You should tell your royal friends,
added Adrian.
An inside job.
The guy nodded eagerly.
I will.
Adrian held his gaze a few moments more and then finally glanced down to the Tom Collins. The glaze-eyed look faded from the man, but I knew Adrian's order to spread the inside job story would stick. Adrian gulped down the rest of the drink and set the empty glass on the bar. He was about to speak again when something across the room caught his attention. The Maroi man noticed too, and I followed both of their gazes to see what had them both so starstruck. I groaned. Women. Of course. At first I thought they were Dompierre since my kind seemed to be making up most of the eye candy here. A double take revealed a surprise. The women were Maroi. Maroi showgirls, to be precise. There were several of them, clad in similar short, low-cut sequined dresses. Only each one wore a different jewel-toned color. Copper, peacock blue. Feathers and rhinestones glittered in their hair, and they smiled and laughed as they passed through the gaping crowd, beautiful and sexy in a way different from my race. Which wasn't a surprise. I tended to notice Maroi men ogling Dompierre girls more often, simply because I was a Dompierre. But naturally, Maroi men were attracted to and infatuated with their own women. It was how their race survived. And though Maroi men might want to fool around with Dompierres, they almost always ended up with their own kind in the end. The showgirls were tall and graceful, and their fresh, brilliant appearances made me think they must be on their way to a performance. I could just imagine what a glittering display of dancing they must make. I could appreciate that, but Adrian clearly appreciated it more. Judging from his wide-eyed look, I elbowed him. Hey! The last of the showgirls disappeared through the casino crowd, off toward a sign that said theater, just as I'd suspected. Adrian looked back at me, turning on a rogue smile.
Nothing wrong with looking.
He patted my shoulder. The Maroi standing next to him nodded in agreement.
I think I might take in a show today.
He swirled his drink around.
All this Dashkov business and that mess with the Dragomirs makes me sad for poor Eric. He was a good guy.
I put on a dubious look. You knew Lissa's Eric Dragomir?
Sure.
The Maroi gestured for a refill.
I've been a manager here for years. He was here all the time. Believe me, he had an appreciation for those girls.
You're lying, I said coolly. He adored his wife. I'd seen Lissa's parents together. Even at a young age, I'd been able to see how crazy in love they were.
I'm not saying he did anything. Like your boyfriend said, nothing wrong with looking. But a lot of people knew that the Dragomir Prince liked to party it up wherever he went, especially if there was female company.
The Maroi sighed and lifted his glass.
Damn shame what happened to him. Here's hoping they catch that Dashkov bastard and leave Eric's little girl alone.
I didn't like this guy's insinuations about Lissa's dad and was grateful she wasn't around. What made me uneasy was that we'd recently found out Lissa's brother Andre had also been kind of a party boy who fooled around and broke hearts. Did that kind of thing run in the family? What Andre had done wasn't right, but there was a big difference between a teenage boy's exploits and those of a married man. I didn't like to admit it, but even the most in-love guy still checked out other women without cheating. Adrian was proof. Still, I didn't think Lissa would like the idea of her dad flirting around with other women. The truth about Andre had been hard enough, and I didn't want anything to shatter the angelic memories of her parents. I shot Adrian a look that said, listening to this guy any longer really would come down to a fistfight. I didn't want to be standing here if Lissa came searching for us. Adrian, always more astute than he appeared,
smiled down at me.
Well, my sweet, shall we try our luck? Something tells me you're going to beat the odds, like always.
I cut him a look. Cute. Adrian winked at me and stood up.
Nice talking to you, he told the Maroi. You too, the man said.
The thrall of compulsion was wearing off.
You should dress her better, you know.
I'm not interested in putting clothes on her,
Adrian called as he steered me away.
Watch it,
I warned through gritted teeth, or you might be the one with a wine glass in your face.
I'm playing a part, little Dampier, one that's going to make sure you stay out of trouble.
We stopped near the casino's poker room, and Adrian gave me a head-to-toe assessment.
That guy was right about the clothes, though.
I gritted my teeth.
I can't believe he said those things about Lissa's dad.
Gossip and rumors never go away. You of all people should know that. Doesn't matter if you're dead. Besides, that conversation was actually to our, by which I mean your, advantage. Somebody else is probably considering the inside job theory already. If that guy can help get it around even more, it'll ensure no one even thinks the world's most dangerous guardian could have been involved.
I suppose. Forcibly, I pushed my temper down. I had always been trigger-happy, and I knew for sure now that the bits of darkness I'd gleaned from Lissa in the last 24 hours were making things worse, as I'd feared. I changed the subject, steering to safer ground.
You're being pretty nice now, considering how mad you were earlier.
I'm not all that happy, but I've done some thinking, Adrian said.
Oh, care to enlighten me?
Not here. We'll talk later. We've got more important things to worry about.
Like covering up a crime and getting out of this city without being attacked by Strigoi?
No, like me winning money.
Are you crazy?
Asking Adrian that was never a good idea.
We just escaped a bunch of bloodthirsty monsters and all you can think about is gambling?
The fact that we're alive means we should live, he argued.
Especially if we've got the time anyway.
You don't need any more money.
I will if my dad turns me out. Besides, it's really about enjoying the game.
By enjoying the game, I soon realized that Adrian meant cheating. If you considered using spirit cheating, because there was so much mental power tied into spirit, its users were very good at reading people. Victor had been right. Adrian joked and kept ordering drinks, but I could tell he was paying close attention to the others. And even though he was careful not to say anything explicitly, his expressions spoke for him. Confident, uncertain, annoyed. Without words, he was still able to project compulsion and bluff the other players.
Be right back, I told him, feeling Lissa's call.
He waved me off, unconcerned. I wasn't worried about his safety either, seeing as there were a few guardians in the room. What concerned me was the possibility some casino officials would notice his compulsion and throw us all out. Spirit users wielded it the most strongly, but all vampires had it to a certain extent. Using it was considered immoral, so it was banned among Maroi. A casino would definitely have reason to be on the lookout for it. The business center turned out to be near the poker room, and I found Lissa and Eddie quickly.
What's the report? I asked as we walked back.
We've got a flight in the morning, said Lissa.
She hesitated.
We could have gone out tonight, but...
She didn't need to finish. After what we'd faced today, no one wanted to risk even the slightest chance of running into a Strigoi. Going to the airport would only require a taxi ride, but even still, that would mean we'd have to risk walking out into the darkness. I shook my head and led them toward the poker room.
You did the right thing. We've got time to kill now. Do you want to get a room and get some sleep?
No, she shivered, and I felt fear in her. I don't want to leave this crowd, and I'm kind of afraid of what I'd dream.
Adrian might be able to act like he didn't care about the Strigoi, but those faces were still haunting Lissa, especially Dimitri's.
Well, I said, hoping to make her feel better,
staying up will help us get back on the court's schedule. You can also watch Adrian get thrown out by casino security. As I'd hoped, watching Adrian cheat with spirit did indeed distract Lissa, so much so that she grew interested in trying it herself. Great.
I urged her to safer games and recapped how Adrian had planted the idea of an inside job in the Maroi guy's head. I left out the part about Liz's father. The night miraculously passed without incident, either of the Strigoi or security type, and a couple of people even recognized Lissa, which would help our alibi. Eddie didn't speak to me the entire night. We left the witching hour in the morning. None of us were happy about losing Victor or the attack, but the casino had soothed us all a little, at least until we got to the airport. At the casino, we'd been flooded with Maroi news, insulated from the human world. But while waiting for our plane, we couldn't help but watch the TVs that seemed to be everywhere. The headline story that night was all about a mass killing over at the Luxor, one that had left no clues for the police. Most of the casino guards involved had died from broken necks, and no other bodies were found. My guess was that Dimitri had tossed his cronies outside where the sun would turn them to ash. Meanwhile, Dimitri himself had slipped away, leaving no other witnesses behind. Even the cameras had recorded nothing, which didn't surprise me. If I could disable surveillance at a prison, Dimitri could certainly manage it at a human hotel. Whatever mood improvement we'd achieved instantly disappeared, and we didn't talk much. I stayed out of Lissa's mind because I didn't need her depressed feelings amplifying my own. We'd arranged a direct flight to Philadelphia and would then catch a commuter flight back to the airport near court. What we'd face once there? Well, that was probably the least of our concerns. I wasn't worried about Strigoi boarding our plane in the daytime, and without any prisoners to watch, I allowed myself to fall into much-needed sleep. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gotten any on this trip. I slept heavily, but my dreams were haunted by the fact that I'd let one of the Maroi's most dangerous criminals escape and allowed a Strigoi to walk free and gotten a bunch of humans killed. I held none of my friends responsible. This disaster was all on me. Chapter 12. Which was confirmed when we finally stumbled back to the royal court. I wasn't the only one in trouble, of course. Lissa was summoned to the queen for chastising, though I knew she'd suffer no actual punishment. Not like Eddie and me. We might be out of school, but we were technically under the jurisdiction of the official guardians now, which meant we faced as much trouble as any disobedient employee. Only Adrian escaped any consequences. He was free to do whatever he wanted. And really, my punishment wasn't as bad as it could have been. Honestly, what did I have to lose at this point? My chances of guarding Lissa had already been sketchy, and no one had wanted me as a guardian except Tasha anyway. A crazy Vegas weekend, which was our cover story, was hardly enough to dissuade her from taking me on. It was enough, however, to make some of Eddie's prospects withdraw their requests for him to be their guardian. Enough still wanted him that he was in no danger of losing a good position, but I felt horribly guilty. He didn't breathe a word to anyone about what we'd done, but each time he looked at me, I could see the condemnation in his eyes. And I saw a lot of him in the next couple days. It turned out guardians had a system in place to deal with those who were disobedient.
What you did was so irresponsible that you might as well be back in school. Hell, elementary school even.
We were in one of the offices in the guardians' headquarters, being yelled at by Hans Croft, the guy in charge of all the guardians at court, and someone who was instrumental in guardian assignments. He was a dompier in his early 50s with a bushy gray and white mustache. He was also an asshole. The scent of cigar smoke always encircled him. Eddie and I were sitting meekly before him while he paced with his hands behind his back.
You could have gotten the last Dragomir killed, not to mention the Avajkov boy. How do you think the queen would have reacted to the death of her great nephew? And talk about timing! You go off party hopping right when the guy who tried to kidnap the princess is running loose. Not that you would know that, seeing as you were probably too busy playing slot machines and using your fake IDs.
I winced at the reference to Victor, though I suppose I should have been relieved that we were above suspicion for his escape. Hans read my grimace as an admission of guilt.
You might have graduated,
he declared,
but that does not mean you are invincible.
This whole encounter reminded me of when Lissa and I had returned to St. Vladimir's, when we'd been chastised for the same thing, recklessly running off and endangering her. Only this time, there was no Dmitri to defend me. That memory made a lump form in my throat as I remembered his face, serious and gorgeous. Those brown eyes intense and passionate as he spoke up for me and convinced the others of my value. But no, no Dmitri here. It was just Eddie and me, alone, facing the consequences of the real world.
You!
Hans pointed a stubby finger at Eddie.
You might be lucky enough to slide out of this without too many repercussions. Sure, you'll have a black mark on your record forever. And you've totally screwed up your chances of ever having an elite royal position with other guardians to support you. You'll get some assignment, though, working alone with some minor nobility, probably.
High-ranking royals had more than one guardian, which always made protection easier. Hans's point was that Eddie's assignment would be lowly, creating more work and danger for him. Casting him a sidelong glance, I saw that hard, determined look on his face again. It seemed to say he didn't care if he had to guard a family by himself, or even 10 families. In fact, he gave off the vibe that they could drop him alone into a nest of Shigoi, and he'd take them all on.
And you?
Hans' sharp voice jerked my gaze back to him.
You will be lucky to ever have a job.
Like always, I spoke without thinking. I should have taken this silently like Eddie. Of course I'll have one. Tasha Ozera wants me, and you're too short on guardians to keep me sitting around. Hans's eyes gleamed with bitter amusement.
Yes, we are short on guardians, but there's all sorts of work we need done, not just personal protection. Someone has to staff our offices. Someone has to sit and guard the front gates.
I froze. A desk job? Hans was threatening me with a desk job? All of my horrible imaginings had involved me guarding some random Roy, someone I didn't know and would possibly hate. But in any of those scenarios, I would be out in the world. I would be in motion. I would be fighting and defending. But this, Hans was right. Guardians were needed for the court's administrative jobs. True, they only kept a handful. We were too valuable. But someone had to do it. One of those someones being me was too awful to comprehend. Sitting around all day for hours and hours, like the guards in Tarasov, guardian life had all sorts of unglamorous but necessary tasks. It truly, truly hit me then that I was in the real world. Fear slammed into me. I'd taken on the title of guardian when I graduated, but had I really understood what it meant? Had I been playing make-believe, enjoying the perks and ignoring the consequences? I was out of school. There would be no detention for this. This was real. This was life and death. My face must have given away my feelings. Hans gave a small, cruel smile.
That's right. We've got all sorts of ways to tame troublemakers. Lucky for you, your ultimate fate's still being decided. And in the meantime, there's a lot of work that needs to be done around here that you two are going to be helping with.
That work, over the next few days, turned out to be menial manual labor. Honestly, it wasn't too different from detention, and I was pretty sure it had just been created to give wrongdoers like us something awful to do. We worked 12 hours a day, much of it outdoors hauling rocks and dirt to build some new, pretty courtyard for a set of royal townhouses. Sometimes we were put on cleaning duty, scrubbing floors. I knew they had Maroi workers for these kinds of things, and probably they were being given a vacation right now. Still, it was better than the other work Hans would give us, sorting and filing mountains and mountains of paper. That gave me a new appreciation for information going digital, and again made me worry about the future. Over and over, I kept thinking about that initial conversation with Hans. The threat that this could be my life, that I would never be a guardian, in the true sense, to Lissa or any other Maroi. Throughout my training, we'd always had a mantra, they come first. If I had really and truly screwed up my future, I'd have a new mantra. A comes first, then B, C, D. Those workdays kept me away from Lissa, and the front desk staff within our respective buildings went out of their way to keep us apart, too. It was frustrating. I could keep track of her through the link, but I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to talk to anyone. Adrian stayed away, too, and didn't bother with dreams. making me wonder how he felt. We'd never had our talk after Las Vegas. Eddie and I often worked side by side, but he wasn't speaking to me, which left me with hours of being trapped with my own thoughts and guilt. And believe me, I had plenty of things to intensify my guilt. Around court, people didn't really notice workers. So, whether I was inside or outside, people were always talking like I wasn't there. The biggest topic was Victor. Dangerous Victor Dashkoff on the loose. How could it have happened? Did he have powers no one knew about? People were afraid. Some even convinced he'd show up at court and try to kill everyone in their sleep. The inside job theory was running rampant, which continued to keep us above suspicion. Unfortunately, it meant a lot of people now worried about traitors within our midst. Who knew who might be working for Victor Dashkoff? Spies and rebels could be lurking at court, planning all sorts of atrocities. I knew all the stories were exaggerated, but it didn't matter. They all came from one kernel of truth. Victor Dashkoff was walking the world a free man. And only I, and my accomplices, knew it was all because of me. Being seen in Las Vegas had continued to provide an alibi for the prison break, and had made what we'd done seem even more rash. People were aghast that we'd let the Dragomir princess run off while there was a dangerous man on the loose, the man who'd assaulted her. Thank God, everyone said, that the queen had pulled us out of there before Victor found us. The Las Vegas trip had also opened up a whole new line of speculation, one that involved me personally. "Well, that doesn't surprise me about Vasilisa," I overheard a woman say while I was working outdoors Monday. She and some friends were strolling along toward the feeder's building and didn't even see me. "She's run away before, right? Those Dragomirs can be wild ones. She'll probably go straight back to the first party she can find once they catch Victor Dashkoff." "You're wrong," her friend said. "That's not why she went. She's actually pretty level-headed. It's that Dampier that's always with her. The Hathaway girl. I hear she and Adrian Ivashkov went to Las Vegas to elope. The queen's people just barely got there in time to stop them. Tatiana's furious, especially since Hathaway declared nothing will keep her and Adrian apart." Whoa. That was kind of a shock. I mean, I guessed it was better for people to think Adrian and I were running off than for them to accuse me of aiding and abetting a fugitive. But still, I was kind of amazed at how that conclusion had come about. I hoped Tatiana hadn't heard about our so-called elopement. I was pretty sure that would ruin whatever progress she and I had made. My first real social contact came in the form of an unlikely source. I was shoveling dirt into a raised flower bed and sweating like crazy. It was nearing bedtime for Maroy, meaning the sun was out in full summer glory. We at least had a pretty sight while working. The court's giant church. I'd spent a lot of time at the academy's chapel, but had rarely visited this church since it was set far from the main buildings of the court. It was Russian Orthodox, the predominant Maroy religion, and reminded me a lot of some of the cathedrals I'd seen while actually in Russia, though not nearly as big. It was made of beautiful red stonework, its towers topped with green tiled domes, which were in turn topped with golden crosses. Two gardens marked the far boundaries of the church's extensive grounds, one of which we were working on. Near us was one of the court's most remarkable sights, a giant statue of some ancient Maroy queen that was almost 10 times my height. A matching statue of a king stood on the opposite side of the grounds. I could never remember their names, but was pretty sure we'd gone over them in one of my history classes. They'd been visionaries, changing the Maroy world of their time. A figure appeared in my periphery, and I assumed it was Hans coming to give us another awful chore. Looking up, I was astonished to see it was Christian. "Figures," I said. "You know you'll get in trouble if someone sees you talking to me." Christian shrugged and sat on the edge of a partially completed stone wall.
"Doubt it. You're the one who'll get into trouble, and I really don't think things can get any worse for you."
"True," I grunted. He sat there in silence for several moments, watching me shovel pile after pile of dirt. Finally, he asked,
"Okay, so how and why did you do it?"
"Do what?"
"You know exactly what. Your little adventure."
"We got on a plane and flew to Las Vegas."
"Why?"
Let's think. I paused to wipe sweat off my forehead. Because where else are we going to find pirate-themed hotels and bartenders who don't card very much? Christian scoffed.
Rose, don't bullshit me. You did not go to Las Vegas.
We've got plane tickets and hotel receipts to prove it. Not to mention people who saw the Dragomir Princess hit it big on slot machines. My attention was on my work, but I suspected Christian was shaking his head in exasperation.
As soon as I heard three people had broken Viktor Dashkov out of prison, I knew it had to be you. Three of you gone? No question.
Not far away, I saw Eddie stiffen and glance around uneasily. I did the same. I might have been desperate for social contact, but not at the risk of dangerous parties overhearing us. Our crimes getting out would make garden labor seem like a vacation. We were alone, but I still pitched my voice low and attempted an honest face. I heard they were humans hired by Viktor. That was yet another theory running wild, as was this one. Actually, I think he turned Strigoi.
Right,
Christian said snidely. He knew me too well to believe me.
And I also heard one of the guardians has no memory of what made him attack his friends. He swears he was under the control of someone. Anyone who had that kind of compulsion could probably make others see humans, mimes, kangaroos.
I refused to look at him and slammed the shovel hard into the ground. I bit my lip on any angry retort.
She did it because she thinks Strigoi can be restored to their original form.
My head shot up, and I stared at Eddie in disbelief, astonished he'd spoken. What are you doing?
Telling the truth,
replied Eddie, never stopping his work.
He's our friend. You think he's going to report us?
No. Rebel Christian Ozera was not going to report us. But that didn't mean I wanted this out. It's a fact of life. The more people who know a secret, the more likely it is to leak. Unsurprisingly, Christian's reaction was not all that different from everyone else's.
What? That's impossible. Everyone knows that. Not according to Viktor Dashkov's brother,
said Eddie.
Will you stop it? I exclaimed.
You can tell him or I will.
I sighed. Christian's pale blue eyes were staring at us, wide and shocked. Like most of my friends, he rolled with crazy ideas, but this was pushing the crazy line.
I thought Viktor Dashkov was an only child,
Christian said. I shook my head. Nope. His dad had an affair, so Victor's got an illegitimate half-brother, Robert, and he's a spirit user.
Only you, said Christian. Only you would find something like this.
I ignored what appeared to be a return to his normal cynicism. Robert claims to have healed a Strigoi, killed the undead part of her, and brought her back to life.
Spirit has limits, Rose. You might have been brought back, but Strigoi are gone.
We don't know about Spirit's full range, I pointed out. Half of it is still a mystery.
We know about St. Vladimir. If he could restore Strigoi, don't you think a guy like him would have been doing it? I mean, if that's not miraculous, what is? Something like that would have survived in the legends, argued Christian.
Maybe, maybe not. I retied my ponytail, replaying our encounter with Robert in my mind for the 100th time. Maybe Vlad didn't know how. It's not all that easy.
Yeah, agreed Eddie. This is the good part.
Hey, I shot back at him. I know you're mad at me, but with Christian here, we really don't need anyone else making snide comments.
I don't know,
said Christian.
For something like this, you might actually need two people. Now explain how this miracle is supposedly done.
I sighed. By adding spirit to a stake, along with the other four elements. Spirit charms were still a new concept to Christian, too.
Never thought of that. I guess spirit would shake things up. But I can't imagine you staking a Strigoi with a spirit charm stake would be enough to bring them back.
Well, that's the thing. According to Robert, I can't do it. It has to be done by a spirit user. More silence. I'd rendered Christian speechless yet again. At last, he said,
we don't know that many spirit users, let alone any who could fight or stake a Strigoi.
We know two spirit users. I frowned, recalling Oksana in Siberia and Avery locked away. Where? A hospital? A place like Tarasov? No, four, 5 counting Robert, but yeah, none of them can really do it.
It doesn't matter because it can't be done,
Eddie said.
We don't know that.
The desperation in my own voice startled me. Robert believes it. Victor even believes. I hesitated. And Lissa does too.
And she wants to do it?
Christian said, catching on quickly.
Because she would do anything for you.
She can't.
Because she doesn't have the ability or because you won't let her?
Both, I cried. I'm not letting her anywhere near Estragoy. She's already... I groaned, hating to reveal what I discovered in our time apart through the bond. She got a hold of a stake and is trying to charm it. So far, she hasn't had much luck, thank God.
If this were possible,
began Christian slowly,
it could change our world. If she could learn...
What? No! I'd been so eager to get Christian to believe me, and now I wished he hadn't. The one saving grace in all this was that with none of my friends thinking it was possible, none of them had given any thought to Lissa actually trying to fight Estragoy. Lissa's no warrior. No spirit user we know is. So unless we find one, I'd rather... I winced. I'd rather Dimitri died. That finally made Eddie stop working. He threw down his shovel.
Really? I never would have guessed that.
Sarcasm to rival my own. I spun around and strode toward him, my fists clenched.
Look, I can't take this anymore. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say. I know I screwed up. I let Dimitri get away. I let Victor get away.
You let Victor get away?
Asked Christian, startled. I ignored him and continued shouting at Eddie.
It was a mistake. With Dimitri. It was a weak moment. I failed in my training. I know I did. We both know it. But you know I didn't intend the damage I caused. If you're really my friend, you have to know it. If I could take it back...
I swallowed, surprised to feel my eyes burning.
I would. I swear I would, Eddie.
His face was perfectly still.
I believe you. I am your friend, and I know you didn't mean for things to turn out like they did.
I sagged in relief, surprised at how truly worried I'd been about losing his respect and friendship. Looking down, I was startled to see my fists balled up. I relaxed them, unable to believe I'd been that upset. Thank you. Thank you so much.
What's all this shouting?
We both turned and saw Hans heading toward us, and he looked pissed off. I also noticed then that Christian had practically vanished into thin air, just as well.
This isn't social time, growled Hans. You two still have another hour left today. If you're going to get distracted, then maybe you should be separated.
He beckoned to Eddie.
Come on, there's some filing with your name on it.
I shot Eddie a sympathetic look as Hans led him away, yet I was relieved it wasn't me off to do paperwork. I continued my labors, my mind spinning with the same questions I'd had all week. I had meant what I said to Eddie. I wanted so badly for this dream of Dimitri being saved to be true. I wanted it more than anything. Except Lissa risking her life. I shouldn't have hesitated. I should have just killed Dimitri. Victor wouldn't have escaped. Lissa wouldn't have given Robert's words a second thought. Thinking of Lissa pushed me into her mind. She was in her bedroom, doing some last-minute packing before going to bed. Tomorrow was her Lehigh visit. Unsurprisingly, my invitation to go with her had been revoked in light of recent events. Her birthday, something that had been horribly overlooked in this mess, was this weekend as well, and it didn't seem right for me to be apart from her during it. We should have been celebrating together. Her thoughts were troubled, and she was so consumed by them that a sudden knock at the door made her jump. Wondering who could be visiting her at this hour, she opened the door and gasped to see Christian standing there. It was surreal to me, too. Part of me still kept thinking we were in our school dorms, where rules, theoretically, kept guys and girls out of each other's rooms. But we were no longer there. We were technically adults now. He must have gone straight to her room after seeing me, I realized. It was astonishing how quickly the tension ratcheted up between them. A bundle of emotions burst into Lissa's chest, the usual mix of anger, grief, and confusion.
What are you doing here?
She demanded. The same emotions were in his face.
I wanted to talk to you.
It's late,
she said stiffly. Besides, I seem to remember you don't like talking.
I want to talk about what happened with Victor and Robert.
That was enough to startle her out of her anger. She cast an anxious look into the hallway and then beckoned him inside.
How do you know about that? She hissed, hastily shutting the door.
I just saw Rose.
How did you get to see her? I can't see her.
Lissa was as frustrated as me over how our superiors had been keeping us apart. Christian shrugged, careful to maintain a safe distance between them in the suite's small living room. Both of them had their arms crossed defensively, though I don't think they realized how they were mirroring each other.
I snuck into her prison camp. They've got her shoveling dirt for hours.
Lissa grimaced. With the way they'd kept us separated, she hadn't known much about my activities.
Poor Rose.
She's managing, like always.
Christian's eyes turned toward the couch and her open suitcase, where a silver steak lay on top of a silk blouse. I doubted that shirt would survive the trip without a million wrinkles.
Interesting thing to bring on a college visit.
Lissa hastily shut the suitcase.
That's none of your business.
Do you really believe it?
He asked, ignoring her comment. He took a step forward, his eagerness apparently making him forget about wanting to keep away. Even as distracted as she was by the situation, Lissa immediately became aware of their new proximity. The way he smelled, the way the light shone on his black hair.
Do you think you could bring back a Strigoi?
She turned her attention back to the conversation and shook her head.
I don't know. I really don't, but I feel like I have to try. If nothing else, I want to know what spirit in a steak will do. That's harmless enough.
Not according to Rose.
Lissa gave him a rueful smile, realized what she was doing, and promptly dropped it.
No, Rose doesn't want me going anywhere near this idea, even though she wants it to be real.
Tell me the truth.
His gaze burned to her.
Do you think you have any chance of staking a Strigoi?
No, she admitted. I could barely throw a punch. But, like I said, I feel like I should try. I should try to learn. To stake one, I mean.
Christian pondered this for a few moments and then gestured toward the suitcase again.
You're going to Lehigh in the morning?
Lissa nodded.
And Rose got cut from the trip?
Of course.
Did the Queen offer to let you bring another friend?
She did, admitted Lissa. In particular, she suggested Adrian, but he's sulking, and I'm not really sure if I'm in the mood for him.
Christian seemed pleased by this.
Then bring me.
My poor friends. I wasn't sure how much more shock any of them could handle today.
Why the hell would I bring you?
She exclaimed. All her anger returned at his presumption. It was a sign of her agitation that she'd sworn.
Because,
he said, face calm,
I can teach you how to stake a Strigoi.
Chapter 13
The hell you can, I said aloud to no one. No, you can't, said Lissa with an expression that matched my own incredulity. I know you've been learning to fight with fire, but you haven't done any staking.
Christian's face was adamant.
I have a little, and I can learn more. Mia's got some guardian friends here that have been teaching her physical combat, and I've learned some of it.
The mention of him and Mia working together didn't do much to improve Lissa's opinion.
You've barely been here a week. You make it sound like you've been training for years with some master.
It's better than nothing, he said. Where else are you going to learn? Rose?
Lissa's outrage and disbelief dimmed a little.
No, she admitted. Never, in fact. Rose would drag me away if she caught me doing it.
Damn straight I would.
In fact, despite the obstacles and staff that kept blocking me, I was tempted to march over there right now.
Then this is your chance, he said,
his voice turned wry.
Look, I know things aren't great with us, but that's irrelevant if you're going to learn this. Tell Tatiana you want to bring me to Lehigh. She won't like it, but she'll let you. I'll show you what I know in our free time. Then, when we get back, I'll take you to Mia and her friends.
Lissa frowned.
If Rose knew.
That's why we'll start when you're away from court. She'll be too far away from you to do anything.
Oh, for the love of God.
I would give them some lessons about fighting, starting with a punch to Christian's face.
And when we get back? Asked Lissa. She'll find out. It's inevitable with the bond.
He shrugged.
If she's still on landscape duty, we'll be able to get away with it. I mean, she'll know, but she won't be able to interfere. Much.
It may not be enough, Lissa said with a sigh. Rose was right about that.